morning. Welcome to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. I'm Brad Pollock in studio today, waiting for your calls at 303-713-8255 or in Steamboat, 970-457-1009. And Gary, you're in Steamboat?
Steamboat, a lot of snow today. We're ready to go for everybody. You know the telephone number is 303-713-8255. We're going to handle your calls, your questions on any legal subject. And you know, Brad, I think maybe we ought to talk a little bit about the show that we did on Friday on this health insurance card. When you go to the emergency room, let's say you're in an accident, you go to the emergency room and you need care and treatment, and they say, we don't really need your health insurance card. What? And so let's lay the groundwork for that subject for a little bit.
You're right, Gary. We're doing a Back to the Basics studio or Back to the Basics shows right now for the month of January and February on all of our stations. We're talking to people about the basics that you need to understand when you get hurt in an accident. We are accident lawyers and we're personal injury lawyers in our real lives, but Gary, as we know, on Saturday mornings, we become just regular lawyers willing to help anybody who has any question on any topic. Feel free to give us a call. We're happy to talk to you. We're happy to discuss whatever topic you might have. So please make sure you give us a call if you have something going on that's legal related. We're not a political show. We don't talk politics, but we'll sure talk law with you. You know, it's amazing. You go into the hospital. Centura Hospital seemed to like this. And instead of wanting your insurance card, your health insurance card, and your health insurance information, even when you're in the network, if you've been hurt in an accident, they want all the information concerning the accident. And you're going...
Yeah, they do.
Go ahead,
they
Gary.
Do, and they say, why don't you just fill out a couple of these forms? And you're all of a sudden dealing with a company you've never heard of, a company you don't want to hear of, a company you don't want to deal with. And so... When was it the last time you went to the emergency room or your doctor and they ask you, you know, who's the third party? What's their name? What's their insurance coverage? How did this accident happen? Were there any passengers? Tell me the impact. Tell me the speed of the vehicles. Tell me what the policy number is. That's what this situation is about. That's what you need to know. That's what the consumers, the ordinary people need to know when you go to the emergency room. They say, well, here, and this will assist you in getting your medical bills paid. You don't have to sign or do these forms because they're trying to, in the end, charge you more money. And we did a show on Friday. It's going to air tomorrow mornings, and it'll also be podcast on our website, championsofthepeople.com, explaining in detail how this works. You know, but Brad, let's just cover the basics of it. How does this work? How does this hurt the consumer? How do they end up paying more money? How does it hurt them financially?
Well, it's knowing the business behind the business when you're dealing with insurance companies. Your health insurance company has certain special rates that they get charged by hospitals, by healthcare providers, for being in network, for treating patients who are in network. And because they have these special rates, because they try and take care of their health insurance companies and their own insureds, your charges will be less if you go through the health insurance company. In Colorado, we have a system where your recovery is the amount billed, not the amount paid. So obviously, when a hospital brings you in from a car accident and they're about to take care of you, they're about to give you care, they would rather charge the higher rate. And where do they charge that higher rate? They charge that higher rate by being able to charge your car insurance rather than your health insurance. So it makes money for them. Gary.
And the example that we used on Friday that you'll hear tomorrow morning and on our website, championsofthepeople.com, is let's say you go to the emergency room, your medical bills are $10,000. If they use your health insurance card, let's just say Blue Cross Blue Shield, the hospital might get paid $6,000 for the $10,000 of services. That's the contract they entered into. That's the arrangement they agreed to in advance. Now, they give you a separate couple of pieces of paper. Here, sign these papers, fill out all this insurance information, accident information, and there's one company called Avectus. There's other companies just like them. And we don't need your health insurance card because this new company in your life will take care of everything. But what they do is they go try to reduce the amount that you can recover from the at-fault party. And they don't take the $6,000 discounted payment. They don't take it at all. They don't want it. They want the full $10,000. And it's a complicated legal transaction. Bottom line is you don't want to sign these forms. You want to get your eyes wide open. You don't want to be into this situation where you're dealing with this third-party company you never heard about.
Let's talk to Paul in Fort Collins. Paul, you fell outside your condo. How are you doing today, Paul?
It was my son. He lives in another part of the city.
Okay.
He was going to work about 4:30 in the morning and stepped out the front door, and there was some ice on the sidewalk because there's a drain pipe that comes right down next to the sidewalk and goes under the sidewalk. And he stepped on the ice, fell, and broke his hand. Drove himself to the emergency room and got a cast put on it. Unfortunately, he can't work for 6 weeks, and I'm just wondering what kind of legal ramifications there are against the condo or homeowners association or whatever, whoever he goes to at the place where he lives at his condo.
Paul, let me ask you. It sounds like there was a lack of maintenance. You said he stepped out of his door that morning, but what time in the morning did he step out?
4:30.
Okay. Obviously, there's not much of a chance for maintenance to be out there at that time of the day. Was it right on his front porch?
It was right out the front door of the condo where everybody has a little mailbox and you can ring in to talk to somebody just outside that main front door.
All right. So this sounds like it is a common area. It's not an area that he has responsibility to maintain.
No, it's a common area.
All right. And go ahead.
Another question is, does he own this or rent it, or what's his relationship there? Because that's a very important question.
Condo. It's a group of condos and sort of like an apartment building.
Okay. And with regard to the location, you said it was recently. Have they been sanding it? Have they been putting any kind of snow melt on it, anything on there to try and keep people from falling?
Evidently they do, but then the morning he stepped out, like you said, it was too early probably, and there was just a small patch of ice there, and he stepped on it and fell.
How long ago was this?
Probably 2 weeks.
I'm trying to remember the weather back at that
time.
Well,
it's that storm we had up here in Fort Collins. We've still got snow and ice on the ground from that one about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
This is a north-facing door.
Yeah.
And water coming off the roof.
So we got water coming off a roof. Well, number one, it doesn't sound like the drainage right is on the roof. That I don't know what they're doing with their gutter system.
That's a problem.
Look at that gutter system right away. That puts them on notice that they have a special condition that they probably need to be giving special attention to, which would mean, they should have snow melt and they should have other protections out there for their people who are stepping outside. And at any time of the day, if they know they've got water coming off the roof, it's going to freeze. The freeze-thaw cycles in Colorado are well-known. Obviously, everybody knows it. You thaw out in the morning or during the day. You have water running. It runs. If you have bad gutters, if you have a bad roof system, you're going to get water onto the sidewalk. It's going to freeze. You're going to have a freezing situation, and you have to have safety for your tenants or for your people who are in the condo association.
Well, the bottom line is, speaking strictly of the law, then the landowner, the homeowners association, has a duty to maintain the common areas. They have to remove what the statute calls a dangerous condition, quote, dangerous condition. That's the pure law talk of it. We've got to explore a little bit more, and I think we've got a break coming up, but we've got to explore a little bit more with you on the relationship you own it, because there's some Colorado cases that talk about the covenants, so we'll probably have to see the covenants. But if you can't work for 6 weeks, very serious situation. And so when you're an owner, as opposed to a tenant, when you're an owner, a special relationships exist with regard to the Court of Appeals cases. And I tell you what, I don't know if we got a break coming up, but I think we need
do.
To talk to you. If you can hang on after the break.
Paul,
yeah,
we're going to take a break. Can you hold with us?
Yeah, I sure can.
All right. After we talk to Paul, we got Robert on the phone, wants to talk about gun laws. We're going to be right back. We're going to take a short break.
Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I'm Gary Bell, along with Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, our radio lives. We're here to help you. Any question, any subject, 303-713-8255. And in the mountains, 970-457-1009. Don't forget about our books. You can get a free copy of our book anytime. We got 3 books published now. We got more coming out. The latest one is on workers' compensation, the definitive guide. If you have any question, lists all the traps you can fall into. And also our book called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. They are cowards of the street, and there's about one, at least one hit and run every day in Denver and around around the community. So, Brad, right before the break, we were talking about Paul.
Paul's
about
on
injuries
with
to the condo association. So let's pick up with him.
Paul, what's your son do?
He works at a lumber yard. They cut lumber, and then he carries lumber around various parts of the yard.
Okay, so it's a lot of manual labor involved.
It's all manual labor.
All right, and you said he broke his ankle?
His hand.
His hand. I guess I don't know what I'm thinking of. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I missed that. What,
his
what,
right hand.
What did he do? Go down on it? And
he came down on it. He didn't realize it was broken until he got into the car and tried to start the car.
Okay.
And then he drove himself to the emergency room and, you know, got a cast on it.
All right. Well, it's my belief, the way you've described things and what I can glean from this, that what we've got here is we've got a situation where the association, the condo, the people who were in charge of the apartment or the condo or maintenance should have had clear knowledge and understanding and notice that they had. Actually, Gary, wouldn't you believe if you got water that's falling down on a walkway from the roof, a dangerous condition anyway?
Yeah, and the statute says you have to prove there's a dangerous condition. That is a dangerous condition. Usually, in some of these complexes, what you look for, Paul, is if they violate an ordinance or a statute, mean or a building code. They don't have to, but that's helpful, because if you can prove that their drainage system doesn't match a code, doesn't match the code the way it's supposed to be, or it's not maintained properly, and I don't care if it's 4:30 in the morning, if it's not maintained properly and it creates a dangerous condition, then liability attaches. What I'm worried about is the covenants of the association, and we'll be glad to help you and look at those. Obviously, we can't do it on the air, because there's cases in Colorado that deal with these covenants and whether or not owners, that's why I asked you the question if he was an owner, whether or not owners can sue their own association for injuries. And that needs to be investigated. But you got a serious enough situation you need to answer.
Right. And what I think I'd like to do, Paul, is get your number or your son's number, call him off the air, and sit down and talk to him about what's got to be done. Make sure we outline for him a legal plan that he can follow. See how we can get some money rolling for him that might be available. You said he doesn't have any income at this point, right?
No, he doesn't, Tom.
Okay, so because the way he works, he probably works on an hourly rate, and there's no sick leave, there's no vacation pay or anything else for him right now.
I can give you my number. I'll have to call him back later this afternoon today and see if he wants to talk with you. But he just doesn't know what to do, and so I thought I would call for him. My number is...
Okay, wait, Paul. Let's do it off the air. I don't want to give your number to everybody.
Yes, I understand.
But let's get your number, and we'll call you. We'll get his number, and it's a free call. So give him a call and find out, because we'll do it free of charge. We'll just talk to him and get him set up and see what he wants to do, all right?
All right, thank you.
So let me put you on hold, and Kevin will take your number, and we're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to go to Robert. Robert, you got some questions about gun laws?
Yeah, I was just thinking, this is really not specific to gun laws. Basically, any law that's passed, when they pass it, it seems like all the additions and they come up with, and it seems like it's just random when they add a new glitch into a law that becomes law or needs to be tested in the court. And pretty soon it's away from the original purpose of having the law. I mean, how can they keep modifying it individually or by the different office or locale or situation without any legal precedent?
Well, I mean, you can do it because you pass statute. We cover. I've got a little echo here. So maybe Brad, you ought to take that.
It's okay, Gary. You're good.
Okay.
What you're talking about, Robert, is how the laws are made and what happens when a bill gets introduced onto the legislative floor. And, you know, we can talk about the state, or we can talk about our city and what happens in our own state, I mean, as far as how laws are passed.
Well, how can the state law, whose law supersedes? In the state, it seems the Colorado law, as long as you're in the state, that's just fine, like with marijuana. When you get outside the state, different states have different laws, so all of a sudden the federal law proceeds.
Well, you know, you're talking about whether or not, and this is a constitutional question, whether or not a law is something that is a federal question and affects the federal, our federal and our nation, versus whether or not it's something that's left for a home rule or for our own state or for even an own city to have its own set of laws. Basically, the state can't pass a law that's in contradiction of or that violates a federal law.
Well, how about the marijuana law? There you go.
Right. Your marijuana laws are very much a problem right now. And as you see, there's getting more and more questions as to whether or not the marijuana laws in a state are legal. Eventually, I would think this is going to be something that's going to be dealt with at our Supreme Court level, the United States Supreme Court level.
But it's never only that. I mean, that's the big picture right now. I'm sure it applies to every bit of the law, land law, water law, everything else. I mean,
it does, Robert. Let's break it down to its basic components. You got cities that can pass ordinances. Then you got states that can pass statutes. And then you got the federal government and the United States Congress that can pass those laws. And they sometimes and many times do conflict. And the marijuana law, the federal law says you can't do it. The state law says you can do it. They still exist. Those statutes still exist. The federal authorities have chosen not to prosecute certain actions under the federal statute. Doesn't mean the federal law isn't there. It's there. They're exercising their discretion not to do it. Ultimately, the real decision comes, as Brad just said, probably in the United States Supreme Court, and that's how they say, well, we've got these conflicting laws. We've got to decide under the Constitution which one controls and which one doesn't, and legally, why? Because you're right, this happens all over the country, every state, every county, every municipality.
And Robert, this was the same thing with same-sex marriage laws. As the state started to allow and some didn't, and you had a question as far as whether or not those marriages were going to be honored in other states, whether or not other states had to give a same-sex marriage license. It goes with at one time, back when you had prohibition, you had questions with respect to whether or not states could allow alcohol consumption where other states didn't. When an amendment got passed, it eventually gets repealed. The amendment would then take priority and precedence until it gets repealed. And now each state has the right to legislate and govern how and under what circumstances you can and can't consume alcohol, on what days and what hours. And it becomes, or at least purchase and sell it, it becomes a situation where, first of all, a bill gets introduced, and that bill goes through the legislature group, whether it's for the state or whether it's for the country or whether it's for a municipality. And as that bill goes through, if it gets passed and signed by the governor or by the president, it's going to become a law. Now, yes, different groups will try to attach and amend other provisions onto that bill as it's going through. And they're doing that for a reason. It's because a lot of times some of the amendments they're putting onto that bill would not be passed if it was just brought before the legislative floor without anything on its own. But because people want the particular bill to go through so bad, they're willing to accept the amendment.
And I can see why you chose this profession. This business for you for the next 10,000 years.
It's very difficult profession when it relates to laws and how those laws work together or against each other. Remember, we got federal RICO laws that a lot of people are trying to shut down the marijuana outlets just on RICO laws. And that's a new set of federal laws that are being used. So when you ask, how does the law get through? Well, it goes through the legislative process. The bill gets introduced, and once it clears both houses, it goes to either the governor or it goes to the president. It gets signed in. During that process, certain parts of the bill can be taken out, certain parts of the bill can be added, there can be amendments put onto the bill, and as it's going through, eventually you're going to get, either it's going to be voted down or you can get a law, you know. And I don't know if you've looked at your newspaper this morning or the Denver Post, and it's talked about how Colorado has a kind of like an all-time low on bills that have passed in this last year, because we have Democrats running one part of the legislature and Republicans running the other, and they just can't get together to even put a bill through.
Hmm.
Well, I want to get my 2 cents in on this situation, because let's all ask the question of, you know, how does the United States Congress pass a law that affects us? Why? I mean, why? So it's under the United States Constitution. It's Article 1, Section 8. And that says the United States government has the power to regulate commerce among the states, and that's where the jurisdiction comes. It says they have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations, several states, among the several states, and Indian tribes. And that's not a good, politically correct words these days, but that's what the United States Constitution says. So that's the jurisdiction. That's the reason. That's the legal basis. The United States Congress passes laws because the, whatever activity they're trying to regulate or control, quotes, affects commerce, end quote. And then they have the supremacy clause that the federal laws control. And that's, and we're not going to get into political fights, but that's one of the basis of the political fights. Some people believe states should have no federal control over them. Some people believe the federal government should exercise control in some areas. But the pure law is the United States Congress can pass laws that, quote, affect commerce.
And commerce is a very broad term nowadays. When the Constitution and when the Supreme Court starts to consider it. Robert, we've got to go to break. Joe, we're going to talk to you next about your statute of limitations question right after the break, so please hang on with us. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I'm Gary Bell, along with Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We do this show as a community service to you. We'll answer your question on any legal subject. As you know, we're injury attorneys, but for this radio show, we're here for you. We help individuals. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. That's championsofthepeople.com. You can listen to any of our podcasts there. You can get to any of our books. And, Brad, I think we got Eric today.
We sure do. Eric, how you doing down there, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. What's going on at Caitlin's?
Well, we're going to mix it up a little bit on our breakfast special for the next couple of weeks. We're going with a breakfast pizza. Now, it's not the kind of pizza you had when you were in college. It's a deep-fried 10-inch flour tortilla. We're going to load that up with pizza sauce, mixed cheese, scrambled eggs, fresh mushrooms, and spinach. That's going to be our breakfast pizza special for breakfast all week long. And then we're going to do a top sirloin steak burrito. We're going to charbroil that up. We're going to load it with sautéed peppers and onions. We're going to wrap that in a Southwest chili chipotle-flavored wrap. Really, really good. We're going to smother that with our scratch-made red or green chili, your choice, mixed cheese, beans and rice, lettuce, tomato, guac, and sour. It's a ton of food. It's a ton of good stuff to do. Those are our specials all week. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, Monday and Friday from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's only $7.99, and that actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. Really good stuff. And as always, we're running those $10 bottomless mimosas, so you can get those anytime. Come on down, check us out. Have a good time at Caitlin's. Bring your friends. Come and check us out.
Eric.
Yes?
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit.
Go for it.
First of all, it seems like it might be a decent day. If I want to eat out on that patio or out front on your patio, can I do it?
You can eat out front. You can eat out back. We've got a couple umbrellas already up. I heard it was going to be 60-something degrees. Come and get the last grasp of it as you can. I know the snow's coming, so come on down and hang out with us and have a good time.
And Eric, there's this big game that's going to be played next Sunday.
That's what I hear. I heard there's a pretty big game going on.
If I want a little bit of catering, is there a chance I can get some catered food or some big trays of food from
there's
you guys?
There's all kinds of things we can do. We can do assorted sandwich trays for you. We can do assorted quesadilla trays for you. We can do bulk red or green chicken or cheese enchiladas. You can come down and get those right on the spot. We make them right there for you. Take them to the house. Have them for your game time. Watch the Broncos win the Super Bowl and have a good old time. Absolutely, yes.
Sounds great. Eric, tell us where you're located.
4379 East Mississippi Avenue. That's one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
You guys got to get down there. It's a good place. I love to eat down there. Eric, I'll see you later.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Take care. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. 303-713-8255 in Denver. In Steamboat, 970-457-1009. We're going to go right to the phones, and we have a question from Joe concerning statute of limitations. Joe, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you, man?
Well, I was wondering, on the, if there's been fraud upon the court, what's the statute of limitations for regress or recourse?
Are you have a grievance against the court itself?
Well, in particular, there's been basically a
fraud performed by somebody else on the court?
Yeah. Basically, it was there were a public servant of the court. They were a public administrator, but it was fraud upon the court. And now it's come to light through further investigation on a case. And a friend of mine went through it, and he's just wondering what the...
Well, normally, a statute of limitations on fraud is going to be 3 years, okay?
3 years.
From the date it was discovered or could have been discovered in the exercise of normal care, all right? But when you start talking about fraud on the court, the question is, are you talking about perjury having been committed where somebody lied under oath? Fraud's a difficult concept when you're dealing in court actions, because when somebody testifies, or, you know, if you're trying to say, hey, they testified fraudulently or in a lie, that's a different story as far as how it is, or somebody committed some kind of a fraud on the court.
In particular, it was a public administrator said that this person took vehicles that he never did, and he wrote it in a letter that said that he filed a report with the Wheat Ridge Police Department, and this happened, and then come to find out through satellite imaging and through some other stuff that the dates were wrong and everything else, and the lawyer that's taking it is trying to convince him that they'll be able to go after this person. And you mentioned earlier the RICO laws. They're just talking about there's like a cabal up there, and is that he just didn't know for sure if it was too late or not.
How long ago did this happen?
It's been an ongoing thing for about 2 years, but he signed off on it because they told him if he didn't sign off, he wasn't going to get anything. And he's an elderly person, and so they kind of literally, it was elder abuse. But I know that they did a state legislator introduce some legislation Wednesday, and it made all the news and stuff. But
when
now
did he,
one of the
when did he sign off on it?
I believe it was in November.
Oh, yeah, we got time. I'm going to talk to you off the air, okay? Get your number and give you a call off the air so we can talk about the details. Okay. And see what we can do. If there's been some kind of a inappropriate action taken, see, now you're getting outside. You may be getting outside fraud, and you may be talking about malfeasance or misfeasance by a public administrator in his or her office, and that then has a different set of rules. And if we think that somebody's committed some inappropriate act, we may have a governmental immunities question that has to be addressed.
It's a pretty complicated situation, Joe, but I got to tell you something. I think if the timing's okay, if it just happened in November, Brad told you about the statute of limitations, but the statute of limitations on fraud itself, the pure law is that it's called the discovery statute of limitations, and that's a little bit different animal. And what that means is it can be past the statute of limitations if you didn't discover or reasonably should have discovered the acts that constitute the fraud. That's what the discovery statute of limitations means. Some of them are absolute statute of limitations, like maybe wrongful death, 2 years, period, paragraph, you know the death occurred, you got 2 years. But some of them are discovery statute of limitations, so I think it's a fact-intensive thing we need to talk to you about off the air.
Yeah, so, Joe, is it all right if I put you on hold, we get your number, and we call you this week?
Sure.
Let's do it that way. Okay, Kevin, if you take Joe's call, I don't see any reason, Gary, we should just stay right with the phones. What do you think?
Yeah, let's go with the phones. We're ready to rock and roll.
Okay, we're going to talk to William. William has a question on how to designate a guardian for his daughter. After that, we've got Carol waiting to talk to us. But, William, what's going on, buddy?
Yes, thank you. My wife and I are both in our early 80s. We're trying to get our documents all set for future and trust and things like that, and my wife has been acting as guardian for our disabled special needs daughter. She is 48 and she's active and all that kind of stuff, but when it comes to money issues and health issues and things like that, she's easily confused. So my question is, when we pass on or become incapable of doing the thing we're doing for her now, we've got to assign a guardian, and we are convinced that our brother or her brother, our son, could do the job. And I'm wondering what, without going to court and all that kind of stuff, we can do to assign him as the future guardian for our daughter.
William, are you a court designated guardian at this time?
No, we're not. We're informal, but it has never been questioned at all that we're currently doing it.
Okay. And does your daughter receive any kind of financial aid from either any federal entity?
Yes, she's got SSI being disabled, yes, and we keep that special account and only send appropriate things on her, and she also has a trust, and we've had the trust reviewed by two or three different lawyers and that to make sure we do things appropriately for her in the future in regards to spending anything out of the trust.
Well, it sounds like you don't...
How are her medical bills or care being paid for?
She has a Humana, and we assist her in bills where she can't pay them, and we use the money from SSI to pay what they require.
Okay, William, here's what we're going to do. First of all, I compliment you on what a great job you're doing and how much you, you've stepped to the front. That's fantastic you and your wife do that. Listen, this is something that when it goes to your son, it could be a little bit different rule because we're going from a difference of a sibling from a parent. And then you could have to get a probate court involved. Actually, in studio, we have someone who takes care of this and does this as a living and as a regular part of his job. And what I'd like to do is just put you on hold right now and have Tony get on the phone with you.
Okay.
And have him discuss what you need to do, all right?
Thank you.
All right, so we're going to put you on hold. Tony, if you take care of that, we're going to go to our next call, which is out of Colorado Springs. It's Carol, who's got some condo issues, and after that, we got Paula. But, Carol, what you got going?
I do live in a condominium complex, and there are like 122 units. We have a... underground parking, and between the underground parking and there is a tunnel into the units, and the roof is leaking and has been for quite some time, and the plaster that has fallen out of it darn near fell on my head, big chunks of plaster, and I have taken it to the board of directors. They don't seem to think that that's a safety issue. There is water all over the floor, and it freezes, and it's scary, should I say, going through the tunnel to get to my car.
We got
car.
A break coming up. Can you hang on with us until after the break?
Yes.
Okay, Carol.
Okay, because
on.
We can get you some answers. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, our law firm is Bell and Pollock. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We got offices in Greenwood Village, Denver, and Steamboat Springs. And I'm in Steamboat Springs right now, and there's more snow than you can even look at here. It's really really great snow, great for the economy. All right, you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, if you want any of our books free. One of our books called Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, Once in the Accident and Again on the Insurance Claim. That's free for you. You can download it on our website if you want, or you can get a hard copy, call the studio right now. Our other book is Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. That's free. And in the last half of the book, we give you basic insurance pictures, examples, narratives on what you need to do to protect yourself. And our new book out is on workers' compensation, The Definitive Guide in Colorado, and it shows you all the traps you can fall into if you've got a workers' compensation claim, and so you need to get that book. So, Brad, let's go to the phones. How are we doing?
Hey, Carol, how's it going? Is Carol with us?
Oh, hello.
Hello, Carol. Okay.
I can hardly hear you.
All right. We'll try and speak up a little bit. Let's talk a little bit, Carol, about the situation. This is a common maintenance area. You said you've gone to the board, and they say they don't see it to be a dangerous condition at all?
No, they are totally ignoring it. They are putting down cones in the area where the water is leaking and saying, well, we've got cones down there, can't you see them? And then there's the water and the ice and what else, the plaster from the ceiling that came down. And I think that's a pretty serious condition for all the homeowners here that use that tunnel for getting to their car.
Well, Carol, I got to tell you, if this weren't so serious, this would almost be comical in what you said.
I agree,
this
Gary.
This is very serious.
It would almost be what? I'm sorry.
Comical.
If it weren't so serious, it'd almost be comical. Let me tell you my take on this. So let's see. They tell you they've got cones out there. So number one, here's how lawyers think. Number one, if they put cones out there, then they know there's a problem. They realize.
Yes, they know there's a problem.
Oh, yeah. And they know they got to warn people there's a problem because it's dangerous. So we put the cones out there, but then they say it's no big deal. Next. If you had an alternative route that might be arguably different, that's how lawyers talk, but you don't. This is a tunnel to how you go get your car. So you're kind of forced into this area, this physical area, where they now know by their own admission, by putting the cones out, that it's dangerous, and now they refuse to accept responsibility. It sounds like maybe it's time for
fading out.
Well, it's time for a letter. It is time for us to do something, Carol, because what we're looking at here, have they even bothered to get an engineer or anybody out there to look to see what's happening to this
tunnel?
They've
had engineers and everything. They have had up a drain, and they took it down because they didn't like the looks of it.
Have they talked about whether it's safe? I mean,
Have they talked about what, sir?
Are we in danger of having this tunnel collapse or any kind of problems like
that? Well, I would think so if I had big chunks fall on my head, wouldn't you?
Right.
Yes, I think so, too.
That's what I'm thinking. Carol?
And there is an alternative walkway, but it is, I'm sorry. They took off the carpeting, and it's just raw cement, and it is very slick and icy too. And they're trying to save money on one hand, which I can understand some of that, but not all of it when our safety is in jeopardy.
Well, this goes back to having to get the covenants and bylaws and take a look and see what has to be done. But yes, this might require that they have to generate additional funds to be able to take care of this defective condition on the property.
Right.
But they know they've got a defective condition. They know it's a area. Now you've talked about an alternate route that is also dangerous. So
what
we need to do is I'm going to put you on hold, especially since if you're having trouble hearing us. I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to get from you your number, we're going to call you, and we're going to get a hold of your covenants and your bylaws. We're going to take a look at them, and we're going to find out what we can do to force these guys into giving this more serious attention and doing something about what is obvious, the dangerous condition that you've got both ways, on both walkways.
This has been going on for at least a year in the tunnel, but not as serious.
Carol, what I'd like you to do is take your camera or your cell phone and go take photos of all this, okay?
I have photos, sir.
Okay, make sure you got some good photos. Get a good record together. We'll get your number and we'll call you this week, all right?
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. We're going to put you on hold. We're going to stay right with phones. We're going to talk to Paula. Paula, you have a question concerning whether a judge has to investigate an attorney?
Well, no. What I was asking was, does a judge rely upon attorneys presenting the truth in their motions, or do they need to do their own investigation? Like, let's read what was admitted as far as prior cases being cited.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, the judges can and do rely on attorneys. They're supposed to accurately reflect the law, argue the law. Obviously, as you've heard this program this morning, sometimes attorneys, you can have four attorneys disagree on the same point of law, so that's not the issue. But if they're falsely reporting matters to the court, and the judge can find, the judge doesn't have an independent obligation to go investigate matters, but usually they find out, and usually it's pointed out to them, and when that happens, there are legitimate repercussions that can happen.
Paul, let's talk a little bit about the system. Here's what happens. I'm an attorney, and I will submit to the judge a motion. And in that motion, there should be two things that I'm supposed to be doing, two basic things, maybe a few more, but two basic things are, number one, I should give the judge the facts that I think are important to support that motion. And number two, I should be giving the judge the law that I think supports my position. Now, there's also a statement out there that if I know of prevailing law or law that's also contradictory to my position, I should at least point it out to the judge. But I'm supposed to argue the facts and law that would have me win my motion. Now, the only way our system works is that there's a good attorney on the other side who, when they refute that motion, they point out either contravailing facts or reasons why my facts are wrong, and also points out law that might run contrary to my position. Now, I believe that judges quite often are going to take a look at the law and maybe get their clerk, because all the judges have their own clerks and they have their own access to the research. They're going to go look at these laws. They're going to go look at the case law. They're going to go look at the law themselves, and they may get their clerk to go do some more research. And Gary, you correct me if I'm wrong on this, because you see it in your practice, but rarely do I see judges go do an independent investigation of the facts. Instead, if the judge has a question about the legitimacy of the facts, the judge will ask for an evidentiary hearing to have us bring our facts in, have the other side bring their facts in, and the judge can then look at the facts as they're presented in evidence and determine which one's correct.
Well, a good example of this is what Robert brought up early in the show, is the marijuana law. So sometimes in a motion or a response, you can agree on the law. The law says this, but you disagree on the facts. So the judge can have a hearing to determine his or her decision on the facts. Sometimes you can agree on the facts, like marijuana. We know it's sold in Colorado, but we disagree on the law. Which law controls, the federal law or the state law? And so you can agree on the facts, have a difference on the law, agree on the law, have a difference on the facts. Pretty much the way it works. Paula, we're up against the wall on time, so we'll be glad to talk to you further off the air. If you give Kevin your information, we'd be glad to, okay?
Okay.
All right. The Bell & Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell & Pollock. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can have any one of our books free. You can call Kevin right now, or you can email us, or you can come by, or you can download them free on championsofthepeople.com. They're right there for you. We're glad to do it. We got more books coming out. We're here to help.